ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये। नष्टप्रायेष्व भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। हरे कृष्ण। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 6 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द यदु डायनेस्टी रिटायर्स टू प्रभास। टेक्स्ट नंबर 18। स्मायावलोकलवदर्शितभावहारी भ्रूमण्डलप्रहितसौरतमन्त्रशौण्डैः पत्न्यस्तु षोडशसहस्रमनङ्गबाणैर् यस्येन्द्रियं विमथितुं करणैर्नविभ्यः। स्मायावलोकलवदर्शितभावहारी भ्रूमण्डलप्रहितसौरतमन्त्रशौण्डैः पत्न्यस्तु षोडशसहस्रमनङ्गबाणैर् यस्येन्द्रियं विमथितुं करणैर्न विभ्यः। स्मायावलोकलवदर्शितभावहारी भ्रूमण्डलप्रहितसौरतमन्त्रशौण्डैः पत्न्यस्तु षोडशसहस्रमनङ्गबाणैर् यस्येन्द्रियं विमथितुं करणैर्न विभ्यः। Matajis? Santa Vanair Smaya, smiling. Avaloka, off a glance. Lava, by fractions. Darshita, having shown. Bhava, their feelings. Hari, enchanting. Bhrumandala, by which arch of the eyebrows. Prahita, launched. Saurata, of conjugal love. Mantra, messages. Shaundai, by the impudent advances. Patnyaha, wives. Tu, but. Shodasha sahasram, 16,000. Ananga, of Cupid. Banaihi, by the arrows. Yasya, whose. Indriyam, senses. Vimathitum, to agitate. Karanaihi, with all their devices. Navibhyaha, they were not able. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Translation. My Lord, you are living with 16,000 exquisitely beautiful aristocratic wives. By their irresistible coy and smiling glances, and by their lovely arching eyebrows, they send you messages of eager conjugal love. But they are completely unable to disturb the mind and senses of your Lordship. Purport. In the previous verse, it was clearly stated that no material object can attract the senses of the Lord. Now in this verse, it is demonstrated that the Lord has no desire to enjoy even spiritual sense gratification. Krishna is complete in himself. He is the reservoir of all pleasure, and he does not lust after anything material or spiritual. The argument may be given that Krishna, in order to please his wife Satyabhama, stole a Parijata flower from heaven and thus appeared to be a henpecked husband under the control of his loving wife. But although Krishna is sometimes conquered by the love of his devotees, he is never influenced by the desire to enjoy like an ordinary, lusty, materialistic person. The non-devotees cannot understand the overwhelming, loving feelings exchanged between the Lord and his pure devotees. Krishna may be conquered by our intense love for him, and thus pure devotees can control the Lord. For example, the elderly gopis in Vrindavan would clap their hands in different rhythms to make Krishna dance. And in Dwarka, Satyabhama ordered Krishna to bring her a flower as proof of his love for her. As stated in Srinivas Acharya's song to the six Goswamis, Gopi Bhavara Samrata Abhilahari Kallola Magnav Muhu. The love between the Lord and his pure devotee is an ocean of spiritual bliss. But at the same time, Krishna remains completely self-satisfied. Krishna indifferently gave up the company of the incomparable young damsels of Vrajabhumi, the gopis, and went to Mathura at the request of his uncle Akrura. Thus neither the gopis of Vrindavan nor the queens of Dwarka could arouse an enjoying spirit in Krishna. When all is said and done, pleasure in this world means sex. But this mundane sexual attraction is simply a perverted reflection of the transcendental loving affairs between Krishna and his eternal associates in the spiritual world. The gopis of Vrindavan are unsophisticated village girls, whereas the queens in Dwarka are aristocratic young ladies. But both the gopis and the queens are overwhelmed with love for Krishna. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna displays the highest perfection of beauty, strength, wealth, fame, knowledge and renunciation, and is thus completely satisfied by his own supreme position. He reciprocates spiritual loving affairs with the gopis and queens simply for their sake. Only fools think that Lord Krishna could be attracted By the perverted illusory pleasures to which we poor conditioned souls are so blindly attached. Therefore, everyone should recognize the supreme transcendental position of the personality of Godhead and surrender to Him. That is the clear implication of this statement by the demigods. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamsha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinavandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. Some devotees suggested that I, instead of discussing Bhagavatam, recite Gita chapters. But then no, I said, I will stick to Bhagavatam. So, here we are discussing this section of the Bhagavatam, where demigods are praying to Krishna in Dwarka. And here the purport is saying how Krishna is conquered by pure love and not impelled by any desire for material sense gratification. No amount of material allurements can tempt Krishna to act for sense gratification. And no amount of beauty of this world can captivate his mind because he is self-satisfied. One word for Krishna is Atmaram, which means he is self-satisfied. Atmaramaschamunayo Nirgrantha Apyurukrame. So that is, Lord Chaitanya explained how 64 different meanings for this verse to Sanatana Goswami. So there it is explained how he is self-satisfied and not hankering after any kind of material enjoyment. So, one accusation we find often against Krishna is, why could he be so immoral? If he is self-satisfied and not after material sense gratification, why does he perform, why does he perform immoral acts like stealing the clothes of the gopis or dancing with the gopis in the middle of the night? These are all against normal social etiquettes. Why would someone who is claiming to be God acting in these immoral ways? So therefore, this argument is not totally baseless. Because in India we find so many so-called spiritual practitioners, spiritual leaders who have engaged in such kind of immoral affairs in the name of religion, in the name of spirituality, in the name of devotion to Krishna. And they have quoted Krishna as their example to follow. So with these kind of bad examples, it is natural that someone will accuse Krishna of setting the wrong example. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in one place, he writes that for a conditioned soul in this age, this modern age, the most difficult subject to understand will be the 10th canto. Because 10th canto describes the personal activities of Krishna. And for a person who is conditioned by so many desires for sense gratification, they will definitely misunderstand Krishna's pastimes. But we need to understand that the 10th canto pastime is coming in the 10th canto, before which Vyasadev and Shukadev Goswami are narrating so many other pastimes. We find Vyasadev describing Ajamil's story, where he became a victim of illicit relationship, the dangers of prostitution, the dangers of extramarital affairs. Then he is describing about the fall of Saubari Muni and so many others. So after describing all these pastimes, and then when he's coming to 10th canto, if in these pastimes Vyasadeva is condemning the dangers of condemning illicit affairs, the dangers of immoral activities, why would Vyasadeva again describe the same thing in the 10th canto? By this simple logic, we can understand that Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto are not ordinary. And Vyasadeva and Shukadeva Goswami would not glamorize them unnecessarily and praise these activities as the most elevated spiritual experiences. Right? So, therefore, by the elevated state of Vyasadeva and Shukadeva Goswami, we need to understand that if these realized souls are glorifying, describing these pastimes, and then great renowned yogis later, who have given up all kinds of sense gratification, are meditating on these pastimes, including Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada used to say, if Lord Chaitanya, the best sannyasi, can worship gopis as the best example of devotees, that means these pastimes of the gopis with the Supreme Personality of Godhead are not ordinary. And they are the most worshipable of all pastimes. So with this logic we can refute the charge against Krishna that God cannot be moral. He has some personal meaning behind these activities. There is some personal exchange, more intimate exchange between Krishna and his devotees. Therefore, in the scriptures, we find lust and love to be, this stark comparison is given between these two emotions. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find how, before understanding Krishna's internal pastimes, we need to understand Krishna's position. In order to understand any person's activities, it is safe to understand his position first. Like for example, if a millionaire or a billionaire is roaming in a garden playing with his grandson or a child, we may think he is just an ordinary visitor in the garden and spending some time, leisure time, and we may mistake him for his activities. But then when he goes to his office and so many people are respecting him and following his orders, then we understand his position. So what a person does in his internal private quarters and what he does in his office are totally different. We cannot judge a person's position simply by his activities. It's difficult to judge. It's like we are likely to misunderstand. Therefore, to understand Krishna, to study Krishna's pastimes before understanding Krishna's position is a risky business. Therefore, those who study and try to understand Mahabharata activities or the Bhagavatam pastimes without studying the Gita is taking a risk. And those who do this are the people who usually misunderstand Krishna's pastimes. Why Krishna killed, Krishna made Arjun to kill Karna, Krishna killed, made Arjun to kill Dronacharya, Bhishma. All these controversies of scriptures, why Lord Ram banished Sita, all these misunderstandings about Krishna's activities is because we fail to understand Krishna's supreme position. Therefore Krishna says, Avajananti Mamudha Manushim Tanumashritam. Param Bhavam Ajananto Mama Bhuta Maheshwaram. Avajananti Mamudha. Mudhas will avajananti, will never understand. In another place Krishna says, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya. I don't reveal my supreme nature to Mudhoyam Nabhijanati Loko Mamachamapayam. To fools and others, I don't reveal my supreme spiritual form. Therefore, it is essential that we first study Krishna's position and then try to understand Krishna's activities. And this principle applies to any great person, even for devotees. Prabhupada used to quote this verse, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vijnana Bujhaye, which means the activities of a great soul cannot be understood by ordinary people. And we will tend to misunderstand their, if we associate them too closely, associate with them too closely, we will tend to misunderstand the activities of even pure devotees. Therefore, in one verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami says about, he describes the identity of Radha and Krishna, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His potency. He says, this Adilila, Radha Krishna Eka Atma Dui Dehadhari Anyonya Vilase Rasa Aswadanakari. Radha and Krishna are one and the same, but they have assumed two bodies. Thus they enjoy each other, tasting the mellows of love. So Eka Atma is one person, but Dui Dehadhari. They assume two different bodies just to enjoy each other. So in one article, Chaitanya Charitamrita explains how Krishna and Radha are the same person, having the same divinity, same identity, but different personality. What does it mean? Having the same identity means both are God in male and female forms. But both of them don't display the same personality or mood. So Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, the male, the enjoyer. And Radha is also the supreme personality of Godhead, but the enjoyed, the feminine counterpart of Krishna. So that way, their identity is the same, but their personality is different. And the same principle applies to Sitaram, Lakshmi Narayan, the energy and the energetic. And as expansions of Radharani, the gopis, they also are sharing the same mood, same service attitude, in order to provide enjoyment to the to Krishna, to Krishna's expansions. Therefore, with this understanding, both are the same person. Therefore, Krishna's enjoying Radharani and other gopis is not on the material level, because the person is the same. Krishna is enjoying himself. And he is not attracted by the external material forms of the gopis or any other energies of Krishna. Whereas, in the material world, we find these two are pervert. We find the perverted reflection of this original enjoying spirit that we find in Krishna. Therefore, in the Gita, Krishna says, Urdhva Moolam Adhashakam. Everything that we find in the material world is a perverted reflection of the original spirit. And in order to satisfy that hunger and thirst that we have, because we are not reciprocating with Krishna, we end up channelizing our desires in trying to exploit matter. And after several frustrated attempts, we finally give up and then we turn our attention towards Krishna. So in the Bhagavatam, we find the gopis' love is described as the supreme. The gopis' method of worshipping Krishna is the supreme, and their loving devotional sentiment towards Krishna is the supreme. Although all devotees are on the same spiritual absolute platform, still we find hierarchy, and gopis are classified as the topmost. But in the Bhagavatam, we also find Krishna is not just embracing and hugging gopis. Krishna is also embracing several other devotees. We find Krishna's love explained towards the Pandavas, towards Uddhava, towards the Gopas, towards so many other devotees, towards Parikshit. In the Ramayana, we find Lord Ram embracing Hanuman. So in all these places, Bhagavatam is trying to bring out the element of love and devotion, and not just Krishna's allurement towards someone's physical body. Right? If someone is accusing Krishna of having loving dealings with the gopis in the middle of the night, then we can point out these also. Krishna is also embracing Parikshit and Arjuna and Pandavas and so many other Hanuman. So in all these cases, the main attraction for Krishna is the love, is the devotion in a devotee, and not just the external forms. Therefore, then after describing all these pastimes in the first 9 cantos, we find Vyasadeva delving into the main topic of Krishna's dealings with the queens of Dwarka and the gopis of Vrindavan. And in all these dealings, again the element of devotion is what is brought out. So a casual reader, especially those who are polluted with the desire of sense gratification, will choose only these pastimes. How Krishna dealt with the gopis, Krishna dealt with the queens in the waters of Yamuna, in the waters of Dwarka, in the lakes of Dwarka. And then they extract and then they abuse the whole pastime. Therefore Kaviraj Goswami once again, several verses in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that compares lust and love as iron and gold. The famous verse is there, Atma Indriya Preeti Vancha, Tare Balikam, Krishna Indriya Preeti Icha, Dhare Premanam. In another verse, Kaviraj Goswami compares lust as iron and love as gold. What is that verse? Anyway, so here, lust is defined as one's desire to enjoy sense gratification. If that is selfishness to the highest extreme, then automatically we will conclude that selflessness means no desire for sense gratification. So Atmendriya Preeti Vancha. Desire for Atmendriya is Tare Balikam. Kaviraj Goswami defines it as Kaam. So naturally we tend to conclude that no desire for Atmendriya is selflessness. But interestingly, he says Krishnendriya Preeti Icha, Dhare Premanam. So selflessness evolved into the highest state is love. And that is not just not doing sense gratification, but providing sense gratification to Krishna's senses. So one state is our senses withdrawn from sense gratification desires, but then our senses directed towards Krishna's sense gratification is the perfection of selflessness. And that is a sign of pure love. So like yesterday, Deen Gauranga Prabhu was explaining, Krishna has senses. He is not just Nirakar and all these personal traits that we find in us. He is also found in the person of Krishna. We cannot just ignore Krishna's personality. And providing, fulfilling Krishna's desire, Krishna's senses is the natural function of every living entity. So that is the perfection of our energies, if we can channelize our energies in supplying Krishna's sense gratification to Krishna's senses, then we perfect our life. And the deity worship is one method of one bona fide method of providing Krishna sense gratification. So although we don't have direct access to Krishna's spiritual form, anyone will argue like that. Who has seen Krishna? How can I provide sense gratification to Krishna? But then the same Krishna comes in a deity form where we can relate to Krishna in all these functions. Just like we treat any ordinary human being, we treat Krishna like a human being, as a person, and provide, serve the person like any other person. Bathe him, dress him, feed him, decorate him. Recently someone was saying, one article in the newspaper said, in some temple in India, they were providing warm water for the deities in this cold season. So that became a big news. They're saying, come on, this is foolishness. The God in the temple is supposed to protect us and he can take care of himself. Why this method of providing warm water in the temple? Instead of appreciating the whole thing as being personal, the newspaper article is condemning the whole thing by saying the pujari is so foolish that they are providing warm water. Anyway, we in the temple, we provide sweater and chadar and blankets and so many other things. If that comes into the news, we don't know what will the media say. Anyway, of course, we have a philosophy to explain the whole thing. But in the comment section I was reading, people are criticizing the whole idea behind providing warm water for the deities. No one has an idea of the philosophy. I was hoping someone will comment on the method of deity worship and how to treat the Lord. But no such comment was found in the entire section. So, anyway, the main point discussed here is Krishna is not hankering after sense gratification, material sense gratification. He is self-satisfied and whatever sense gratificatory acts he appears to do is not for his sake but for the sake of devotees, for giving pleasure to the devotees. That's his main intention behind dealings with his devotees. And Krishna is not immoral. Krishna, in fact, upholds the highest morality. If Krishna was so eager to enjoy the physical bodies of his devotees, then he wouldn't have come in the Hastinapur assembly to protect Draupadi. When Draupadi Vastradharan was happening, why would he come and supply Draupadi unlimited cloth? If his desire was to enjoy the physical body. Right? So, in several places, Krishna is the person who upholds all moral principles and maintains the social customs. Only his intimate devotees, we find that he's appearing to break and violate the principles. In fact, beyond this moral principles, Krishna is not even interested in upholding moral principles. In the Gita, we find towards the end, he demands sarva dharman parityaj. So in the initial section of the Gita, Arjun was eager to maintain all the moral law and social order. He was fearful of Varna Sankar population. If the battle happens, so many people will die and later all the traditions and family customs will be stopped. Someone has to continue the tradition. So if the war happens, who will continue? That was Arjuna's fear. And Krishna gave so many arguments and towards the end he is saying, you give up all dharma. So essentially dharmic principles are meant to maintain morals and ethics. And Krishna is advising Arjun, you give up all moral principles. So here he is trying to prove that neither moral principles, following the moral principles or breaking the moral principles, both are immaterial from one point of view. Ultimately, we have to follow what Krishna wants. That happens to be the highest moral principle. If for the sake of moral principles, we end up displeasing Krishna, that is a failure. And if by breaking moral principles, you displease Krishna, that is also a failure. Like in the Mahabharata, we find Yudhishthir apparently held the moral principle of speaking the truth, but then that was not appreciated. Whereas Bhima in one place broke the principle and that was appreciated. Like in the killing of Ashwatthama, he spoke a lie. And that is considered, was Krishna's desire. Whereas Yudhishthir was hesitating to speak the lie. So our acharyas explain how following moral principles or breaking moral principles are just again on the material platform. What Krishna wants, that is the highest moral principle. Therefore Krishna demands, Sarva dharman parityaja mame kam sharanam raja. Aham tvam sarva pape bhyo moksha yishyami mashuja. So whatever sinful reactions we may accumulate in the course of violating certain moral principles in order to please Krishna, those reactions Krishna will say he will take care of. And we need not fear. So Krishna demands that we be transcendental, we follow transcendental morality, which means all the principles that will please Krishna. That should be the living entity's highest principle. So the 10th canto we find when the Brahman Patnis went to Krishna, Krishna advised them that you should go back and serve your husband, serve your family members. And although they were dejected to hear this, they followed Krishna's order. So here we find Krishna is upholding the moral principle of these women. On the other hand, when the gopis came in the middle of the night, Krishna again advised them, you should go back home and follow your husbands and brothers and family members and you should take care of them. But the intensity of gopis' love for Krishna was so high that Krishna accepted their request of reciprocating with them. So there Krishna noticed that the gopis had already given up all morality. And giving up their family members in the middle of the night and coming to the forest to please Krishna is violating all social norms. And Krishna was pleased by that action. And he protected their moral principles and chastity. So when a devotee, for a regular sadhaka, following moral principles is a part of sadhana. We cannot just say, I am following Sarva Dharman Parityaja principle and break all regularity principles. But as we proceed, we should not become too attached to following these principles for the sake of following them. We should not be Niyamagraha, Rupa Goswami wants us. A time may come where we may have to break certain moral principles in order to please Krishna. So Krishna is going to test us. Are we following the moral principles in spite of all the temptations and allurements? And when the need is there, are we ready to reject these principles in order to please Krishna? So that is upholding, that is the highest principle of all religion. So in this way we find how Krishna is someone who demands complete surrender, complete rejection of all material social customs in order to please him. And therefore gopis are considered as the highest examples of devotional service. In that Brihad Bhagavatamrita we find Narad Muni's journey through all those stages of devotees. So finally Uddhava came, and Uddhava, who happens to be the closest friend of Krishna, he is praying that I want to become a grass in the forests of Vrindavan so that gopis who are the best of all devotees will trample upon me and I will get their dust and be blessed. So therefore we find how Krishna demands transcendental morality. And Shukdev Goswami explains to Parikshit that Krishna's violation of principles, wherever we find Krishna breaking certain principles, he is doing it to prove that he is not again bound by any social and material laws. So if he is bound by social and material laws, that means those laws are again supreme. If Krishna is forced to follow a certain principle just because he is in the material world, That will mean the material, the principles are superior to Krishna's position. And this we find in even ordinary dealings. In a jail, if you find everyone has to follow the law of the prison, but if the minister comes or the government person comes, you break all principles. Right? Even in traffic signals, you find these ministers come and then they just go away, right? Without following the principle. That shows they don't need to follow the principle. They are beyond the principles, beyond the laws. So similarly, when Krishna comes into this material world, he usually follows the laws, but he is not bound to follow the law. And therefore, Krishna says in the Gita, Namam karmani limpanti, name karma phalespruha. I am not bound by the laws of karma. I usually follow the karma, laws of karma, but I am not bound or forced to follow these principles. And one who understands that Krishna is not bound by the laws of karma, such a person is also not bound by the laws of karma. That's one interesting thing. Simply by understanding that Krishna is not bound by the laws of karma, we also transcend the laws of karma. Therefore, that famous verse Prabhupada used to quote, Janma karma cha me divyam. Simply we have to understand that Krishna's birth, activities and disappearance all are divine, not bound by the boundaries of this world. Krishna apparently breaks all these principles just to show his supremacy. If every activity of his were exactly according to the laws and rules, the message will be that the rules are superior. The rules are supreme. Occasionally, once in a while, Krishna breaks the principles just to show that his personality, the person Krishna, is the supreme. And not that these principles are reigning supreme. And whenever Krishna does break the principles, that is out of love. In order to have loving dealings with his devotees. Not whimsically, we don't find Krishna breaking the principles. Only to reciprocate with his devotees, we find occasionally Krishna breaking the principles and going beyond the laws. So in this way we find here also, the demigods, the queens of Dwarka are praying to Krishna with all their gestures and smiles in front of him. Krishna is not tempted, not allured by their gestures and smiles, but he is self-satisfied. That's what the purport is saying. Neither the gopis of Vrindavan nor the queens of Dwarka could arouse an enjoying spirit in Krishna. So that is the main theme in this verse. I'll stop here. Any comments or any discussion? Getting the mic.
You had mentioned that the best guiding principle would be to go by what will please Krishna. How do you distinguish what may please Krishna and what may not by looking at our own circumstances and then interpreting it? Yeah. Because if you're going by the moral principles that are generally followed, what looks to be a breaking of something may, you know, you're mentioning that it is likely to be appropriate, but then, you know, it may be the other way around when you look it from what may please Krishna. How do you distinguish that?
Yeah, therefore we have this 3-point check called Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. We can directly speculate or try to interpret what will please Krishna. Because usually if we try to do that, we, in the name of pleasing Krishna, we may be doing things that are going to please us, our own selves. Therefore we need to follow, we need to have a guide, Guru. We need scriptures, Shastra. And we need a community of devotees who are trying to follow these principles. In such a situation, if we act and try to follow the principles, then we can be assured that we are pleasing Krishna.
Moral dilemma example in real life, and then use this concept to make it clear.
Moral dilemma?
Real life situation.
Huh?
And then, exemplify that point? For example, you gave the example of people who come to the prison and break rules.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not in the same context of whether it is pleasing Krishna or something. Can you give a...
Okay, for example, if you have to do a job, you have to take up an occupation. And the occupation may be not exactly black and white. No, for example, the company may be indulging in some malpractices, which may not be exactly according to our principles. And you may wonder whether I should follow or not, or whether I should take up the job. Now, if we act our own, based on our own understanding, probably we may take up the job. But in a community of devotees, if we discuss, the Shastra says, this is clear white, this is all grey area, this is a black area. Based on your position, based on your circumstances, your social, financial condition, what is appropriate for you to take up? How much black can you accept? Which part of the grayscale you should follow? And how much you, how steadily, what are the steps you can take up to gradually evolve and grow to, go towards the white area? So this cannot be just whimsically decided. For that you need the principles of the scriptures, some personal guide, and a community of devotees who are following that principle. Is that okay?
Not clear actually.
That's a more detailed subject matter. Not easy to discuss in this forum. If you have a personal situation, then maybe we can discuss and try to follow that. Yes, Achyutanandu.
Hare Krishna. After the Ras Panchadhyaya, the benediction by Sukadeva Goswami is given in the Bhagavatam that those who hear these pastimes of Krishna's dealing with gopis, their lust is eradicated. But the same benediction, does it apply to the Dwarka's pastime of Krishna's dealing with his queens? Because such benedictions are mentioned in chapter 90 or other places, dealing with Krishna with his wives, are also mentioned in Dwarka's pastimes and at the end of 10th canto.
I am not sure. Maybe we have to refer to some Acharya commentaries. I don't know. Vidyapit devotees may be able to give input. You know? No idea. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.